This is the Love Foco Show.
We really want to educate people to use your taste buds, use your sense of smell, use your mind, use your common sense. Like, think about it, especially like canned foods, right? It's like, again, all these dates have nothing really to do with food safety. They're mainly freshness and quality.
Welcome to the Love Foco Show. Our podcast highlights the incredible people who make Fort Collins the place we're proud to call home. Each week, your host, Jeff Faust, sits down with local leaders, community champions, and change makers to share their stories, what they love about our city, and how they're helping it thrive. So whether you're out on the trail, at a brewery, or walking through Old Town, thanks for tuning in.
Have you ever wondered what happens to the thousands of pounds of food that don't get sold at your grocery stores and distribution centers? Today, we're sitting down with Nathan, the executive director of Vindicate Foods, and he is going to talk to us about his nonprofit that specializes in food rescue. I'm so excited for you to jump in on this conversation where Nathan and I get to talk about his origin story and how he's always been a man who wants to bring order to chaos and restore the things around him. But more importantly, how Vindicate Foods is helping families and businesses and our environment one step at a time. So grateful that you're tuning in for another episode. My name is Jeff, your host for the Love Foco Show. And I'm so excited to share this conversation with you today. Well, Nathan, thank you so much for joining us on the Love Foco Show. Yes. I've been looking forward to this conversation with you for a couple of weeks now because the work that you're doing in our city is incredible. I think it's a really interesting story. I think it's a story that's not often told. And so I'm thankful that you're giving me some time so we can tell this story together. I want Fort Collins to learn what you're doing. And we'll get to everything that you're doing with in terms of Vindicate Foods and leading that and the way you're loving our city one life at a time. But I want to start our conversation where I start every podcast. Just tell me a little bit about how you got to Fort Collins. Like, if this was a comic book, like, what is your Fort Collins origin story? How'd you get here, and what was life before Fort Collins like for you?
Love it. Love it. Well, thank you, Jeff, for having me. So originally from Texas, I got to visit, Fort Collins, because my cousin, shout out Nicole, I think she was maybe a junior or sophomore in college. I don't know. I came to visit her. I think it was maybe my last year in college. And I was like, are you kidding me? A town like this exists? Like, this is ridiculous. I think I came on tour to FAD. I came during September. It was a beautiful day.
Oh, so the odds were stacked in your favor.
I was like, this is insane. So I definitely had in my mind that I would love to live here. Fast forward, maybe a year later or something, I was out of college and looking for a job, and ended up living with actually that same cousin's parents in Colorado Springs. And was able to get up here to Colorado. Eventually made my way up to Fort Collins, landed a job up here in 2012, and just have loved being in the city ever since. I love how involved the community is in the city. I love the obviously access to the outdoors, just all the things that we all love about Fort Collins, the local businesses, the nonprofits, the festivals, the free things going on in our community.
I think there's just so many people like you, Nathan. Right? They visit once and they're like, wait, what?
Yeah, I know.
What is that? Like, I didn't grow up in Texas, but I grew up in Iowa.
Yeah.
So and then Iowa to Kansas City to Fort Collins. And I remember thinking, where has this place been?
Oh, right.
This is incredible.
Me, same thing.
So where did you grow up in Texas? I mean, Texas is basically its own country.
That
state is huge.
Yeah.
Where were you at in Texas?
Yeah, so I grew up in Corpus Christi. I went to college at Texas A&M, so I was living in College Station when I think I came to visit here. And I already, was kind of in a college town. I already rode my bike everywhere, all that kind of thing. But when I came here, I was like, oh, wow, okay, this is it, kind of thing. And little did I know that because of that same feeling of this community that, fast forward a few years, that a community-led project such as what I'm doing now would really take off in a place like this, unlike potentially other places that I've lived, you know. So that, yep. I think getting a look back, that's kind of a nice little coincidence, I think I'd say. Just such receptive people to caring about their earth and caring about, you know, their community and wanting to do the next best thing, you know. So
okay, so Corpus Christi, you became an Aggie. Before you came here, which is also like CSU is also has an Ag background. So I mean that's interesting to me. I am curious though, like growing up, because Vindicate Foods, again, we'll get into, you know, food rescue, the way you're caring for earth and people through this wonderful nonprofit that you lead. But I do find myself curious, like, were you interested in this kind of stuff growing up? Or like, I mean, you're leading a nonprofit now. Have you always been a leader? Like, where did this stuff come from?
That's a great question. I probably need to think about that more often. But I haven't always necessarily been a leader. I mean, maybe among some of my friends and things like that, potentially. But I've always been someone who cares a lot about things. I mean, I was talking with one of my drivers yesterday, but we were talking about skating, right? Skateboarding. And I remember, like, in seventh grade, I told my dad, I'm never going to stop skateboarding. You know, I can get so passionate about certain things, right? And get really, like, feeling like this is the thing I need to do. So, growing up, it was, whether it was like surfing or skateboarding or finding old surfboards at pawn shops that were all banged up and fixing them and then reselling them or using them. You know, I've always had that mindset, I think, a lot when I look back about, you know, why the food rescue and where that came from. I've always cared about the earth.
So, I mean, I hear restoration there.
Yeah, restoration.
I hear restoration.
Finding
for sure.
things on the side of the, I mean, in college, finding stuff. You know, on the side of the road and fixing stuff. And I think a dresser I had found, I like repainted, you know, just always having that mindset of what is kind of a cast about that's not normal, right? Yeah. Or things that I was really passionate about.
So I find myself really interested in that. So, because there's so many different personalities and even temperaments, are you the kind of guy that loves like looking for the discarded item?
Yeah.
And there's something about, or is it more like the finished product or the journey in between? Like, what caught your eye at first?
It is really bringing, here's a perfect example. I was walking my dog 5 minutes ago. I found this in the street for you viewers out there.
It's a little piece of metal
with holes in it that I'm like, this will be a great thing to attach something to something. Like. And, you know, I mean, I don't want to be like, too much of a, I piddle and tinker too much sometimes. But like this is a useful piece of metal that I will use here at this building because I need to attach something that's coming apart. And so finding things that are like discarded and then really just trying to make things better, you know, finding, you know, whether it's me fixing our walk-in cooler or working on an alternator on a truck or, you know, whatever it's. Seeing things that could be better and kind of creating order out of chaos, you know.
Yeah. I love that, creating order out of chaos. Also, if you're not paying attention, let me just draw out from something you just said. As a nonprofit leader, you're leading the organization, you're probably writing thank yous, you're fundraising, you're fixing alternators and stuff around. I mean, you've got to be a jack of all trades to lead an organization like this. And
well, bootstrapping it too and really building it from nothing and really, you know, really being careful with every single penny that someone donates here is so important to me. When someone donates to us, that it is going to the most good. It's not wasted frivolously. Like, if it's something that I can do, I'm going to try to do it. Obviously, I have to put boundaries on stuff. If I'm going to make something worse, or if I'm going to take 15 hours to do something that I could pay someone, you know, a technician to do in 2 minutes, like, or, you know, 2 hours. I have to be smart too, but I try to do as much as I can, you know?
Yeah.
So,
all right. So that's great. I mean, thanks for sharing part of that with me. Out of curiosity, like, what was your major? Did you major in nonprofit leadership
or
what'd you study?
Geology. So more along that earth science, and natural resource love and, you know, growing up, caring about the ocean or coming out to Colorado and caring about the mountains and obviously getting to do that during school was super just formulative to where I'm at now. I mean, a lot of people are like, what, a degree in geology? And I'm like, well, yeah, it is kind of different, but also I care about the world. I care about the earth. I care about resources. I don't want to see you know, food going in the landfill. Like that's, it all comes from that same shared love, you know, which I think is cool to be able to draw those comparisons now.
Well, like you said, I love that even the line of work that you have, it fits Fort Collins.
Yeah.
There are receptive hearts. There's a community that wants to surround you. Before we jump full into that, I do think you had touched on it, but it's one of the things that makes this city amazing.
Yeah.
Is it's a community driven city. It sounds redundant to say that, but it really is. The reason why this city works is because so many people are engaged and involved and like give a crap.
Right.
really want to make a difference.
Well, it's funny you say give a crap. If you look at the back of all our trucks, I have this dumb little slogan that I feel like 50% of people get and 50% don't, but it's give a rip, you know? And so it's like give it. People are like, what does that mean? I'm like, well, give a crap, you know? So that's,
is that like a Texan saying, or is that, because I feel like I've heard that in the Midwest, not so much a Front Range.
I'm not really sure where it came from. Yeah. I think my brother might have said it a couple times, and I think maybe, no, I was going to say I've seen a couple t-shirts that say like, let's rip, but what, you know.
Well, hey, if I ever see a Vindicate truck driving around that says give a crap, then I'll know this conversation has.
Yeah, it has made a difference. Yeah, that'd be funny.
That would be funny. Yeah. But what a great time to visit for one of your first times during Tour de Fat.
I know.
I mean, that's like, as much as people love this city, they also love their beer.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, like I remember coming out for a job interview and seeing on my itinerary that we were gonna go to a brewery.
Cool.
Now, like my day job is I'm a pastor by trade. And so I remember showing it to my wife. We're coming from the Bible Belt.
Right.
And I remember saying like, is this a test? Like what, you know?
Yeah.
And it was a test. Like if you're not comfortable having a beer, like you might not fit this culture very well. Right. Cause it's just the breweries are everywhere, which has been a sweet surprise for sure.
And a lot of them are really generous. They support, Odell specifically support almost all of our events.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at your kind of awareness campaigns, your posters, your fundraisers. I mean, I see Odell's as a sponsor and I mean, I don't know. I'd love to, we should do a podcast with someone from Odell's, but I've heard they have a very keen eye towards caring for the environment.
They do. Yep.
Water sourcing, things like that.
River cleanups.
And giving back to the community.
Yep. Absolutely.
Which is really sweet to see that.
It's really neat to see a lot of local businesses in our community that care about what people are doing and come alongside us, support us. Several of them have donated to help us get into this building. You know, our capital campaign from last year was huge to be able to purchase our own building. So
yeah. Well, let's jump into that because, shared a little bit about your origin story. I mean, Tour de Fat, all the things that make this city incredible. I want to jump in quickly to what you do because when I first heard about this, I was super intrigued. I mean, it just caught my attention. It caught my heart, not just my mind. And I would love to give you just kind of some open space to talk about Vindicate Foods. Because I really see this, I know it's a whole team, but I'm having the conversation with you. This is part of how you're loving our city. It's part of how you're loving our city one life at a time and even beyond that. So tell us, what is Vindicate Foods? What are you guys up to? Food rescue, like take me on that journey on maybe how that began and what you're doing day to day here.
Absolutely. So I'll give a quick brief overview. So food rescue kind of refers to the term of, basically keeping food from ending up in the landfill. So it can take a lot of different forms, but what we do here is we work with, grocery stores, restaurants, farms, anywhere that has food, shipping companies, shippers, truckers, we are able to accept it or we'll go pick it up. And this is all food that's still good, still able to go to people and may be past its expiration, it may be damaged, it may be overstocked, thousands of reasons why we can get it. But then we, basically go through it, make sure it's all good to go, store it properly, safe temperatures, all that, and then give it out to our community at no cost at our market 3 days a week. Now we also work with about 30-ish different nonprofits that we also give food to as well. So that's kind of what we do / food rescue. But our origin story is we actually were teamed up with Surf 6.8 back in 2017. They gave me the opportunity.
Another nonprofit in Northern Colorado. Yep.
Gave us the opportunity to kind of launched this idea under them, and we were there for about 2.5 years before we gained kind of enough mass to basically become our own nonprofit, then moved into our own building in early 2020, and we're able to just keep growing this thing. So we started, you know, I think with, you know, maybe 3 stores that we picked up with, and I mean, honestly, I frankly don't even know how many we pick up with now, because we have so many regular scheduled pickups. We have so many on calls. We have people who hit us up once. We have people who hit us up 500 times. We've had people hit us up 3 times. We have a lot of places like, you know, your regular grocery stores, Costco, Trader Joe's, Whole Foods that we're at weekly. But we also, you know, clear down to sometimes pick up things in Denver, Longmont, Rogan, out east, Colorado, Cheyenne. You know, we're kind of all over the place. If there's food that needs to be rescued and that would otherwise be trashed, we're going to want to get it.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about that, because you had mentioned a couple different things, whether it's expiration date.
Yep.
And, man, if you're in the food world, you know that.
Yep.
You know, not every expiration date is actually a termination date.
Right.
Like there's some wiggle room there. So, but I heard you say that. I heard you hear say like overstock. Could you give me like a little bit more of a rundown on why grocery foods, are they giving you the food, or are you paying for it at lower price, or are they donating it to you?
Yeah.
So they get a little bit of a write off.
Donating it. It's a tax write off.
Yep.
I mean, some donors don't even care to get that, and some of them really do. Right. Yep. There's lots of reasons why people donate. But it again could be like thousands of reasons why it's somebody, there's a packaging error, it's still safe, right? There's a marketing error, there's a sale that's not going on anymore. The day after October, we got lots of calls to pick up pumpkins. Well, pumpkins are edible, and also pumpkins are still like a fall thing, so people are still gonna want them on their front porch, right?
Yep.
All the way down to like yogurt that's just passed by its expiration date or its best by, or you know, meats that are past their sell by or freeze by that are already frozen or we freeze that are still safe, down to prepared foods that you know, reach the end of their freshness guarantee. But again, a lot of these dates are just suggestions. You know, I mean, there's usually two types of people. There's somebody who looks at the date and says, oh, it's bad, I'm tossing it. And then there's another person who is like, wait, is that yesterday the milk was fine, but today it's not? Should I maybe pour it in a glass and smell and taste it before I just assume? Or this box of lettuce, is yesterday it was guaranteed or freshest buy or best buy, but today it's not and still looks fine? I mean, you know, so we really want to educate people to use your taste buds, use your sense of smell, use your mind, use your common sense, like think about it, you know, especially like canned foods, right? It's like, again, all these dates have nothing really to do with food safety. They're mainly freshness and quality. It's basically the manufacturer wants to.
But then it gets into people's heads too. Like,
well,
there's
yeah.
a psychological game there, right? So
yeah.
Yeah, like you said, there's a whole, you know, I don't know, half the population is just gonna walk by that.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
Costco or King yeah. Supers, where they won't put it out on the shelf. They won't
yeah.
sell
yeah.
it.
I mean, there's some nice markdowns going on at a lot of stores now, but yeah, we really are, our main goal is to educate folks on like, hey, this food is still good. Like use your senses to figure this out for yourself. And just because the Lara bar, the Bobo's bar, the you know, the NutriGain, NutriValley, you know, bar is past its best by, it doesn't mean that it's bad. It may start to taste a little like plastic or cardboard, but it's not gonna make you sick, right? It's just past its freshness, just how the manufacturer wanted it to be.
And like you said, if it's mislabeled,
that too. I mean, we've got tons of
super interesting. Yeah. I mean, it reminds me of like a clothing store that has like a factory outlet.
Yeah, irregular.
Right? Is this a similar concept?
Yeah.
Or like that actually might be a pair of, you know, large, whatever, a pair of large sweatpants.
Exactly.
But it's actually an extra large. Someone mislabeled it, so now we can't sell it at
exactly.
full price. Similar idea.
Yep. There's tons of quality control kind of issues from stores, corporate stores that have certain brand standards. I mean, I think I've heard of lawsuits happening when someone said, oh, this product was supposed to be this, it was described as this, but it's not, and there's a loophole there for a lawsuit. And so a manufacturer, a major retailer might not want to take that risk, so they'd rather just donate it to us, knowing that it's still fine and suitable for consumption. You know, that's basically our IRS and food safety guidelines is we're able to offer a tax, you know, deductible receipt if someone's donating food that's fit and suitable for consumption with no negligence or malintent involved. And yep. so it's covered. And so there hasn't been major lawsuits against people donating in good faith, right, to nonprofits. Yep. That's a bill, part of the Bill Emerson Good Samaritan Act is a federal act that allows this donation to yep. work, which is really, really great. So
and without you, what happened? I mean, food just gets tossed? I mean, they just like dumpsters are fit. Like what?
I mean, we started because, you know, I was seeing a lot of food being tossed. There's another fun story with that for maybe for another day. But okay.
It sounds like a story I would want to
yeah,
have.
Yeah. You know, the local food banks also do a lot of food rescue as well. So a lot of stores do donate to food banks. And we definitely don't want to get in the way of that. But there's enough food being tossed all over this country that we need multiple types of organizations doing this type
of work. Do you have like an idea off the top? I mean, if I just quiz, I'm not trying to quiz you, but do you have like any idea? You say a large amount of food's being thrown away. Like,
oh,
do
yeah.
you know I mean, maybe what close
yeah, I mean, they, ballpark they're, is? They're constantly doing different, you know, data sets and trying to figure this out. But back in 2012, there was that big number, the 40% of all food produced in the United States was wasted. So I think we've done a lot better than that, but I definitely don't think it's better than 30. I think at the same time, also Europe had reported about 30% of all food produced was wasted. So they're wow. a little ahead of us, but still a significant amount. And most people know that. If you have an apple tree in your backyard, between the bugs, the squirrels, the weird deformed apples that are growing, or the ones that fall on the ground and bruise, like, you know that your apple tree, what do you think, 50% perfect, maybe 40% perfect fruit on there?
Yeah.
Luckily, we have a lot of companies who like, you know, make juice and applesauce and things like that. But still, most people know when they grow stuff, like not every tomato you're gonna grow is gonna be perfect, right? Some of them may have blemishes or have two or have a, you know, a little spot where they got bit or whatever. So, you know, we have these standards as consumers of perfection, right? And that's another thing that
it's an American standard. I think it's an American standard.
Yeah, really, when we want to fight against that as well. Not only is like, is food still good and does it last longer than we think, but also that we don't need perfection. Like that's kind of a sickness across the humankind, is that we want to present this and we want to look good and we want to have this perfection for us. And so that's, the stores aren't the problem. I always like to let people know that the companies aren't the problem. It's we want these things.
It's the consumer.
We spend our hard-earned money and there's one water bottle left on the shelf. We're like, that's weird. Or we don't want to buy a bruised apple right now. If it's discounted, maybe we would consider it because we're making a pie. But most folks, you know, you don't want to spend your hard-earned money on kind of goofy things, you know. And so we realized that, you know, it does take time and it does take a sacrifice to you know, sort through pears that are kind of a little beat up, or to make a sauce with them, or to whatever, you know, things aren't going to be perfect, but that's the magic, right? Is taking that extra step to redeem something that would otherwise be trash because of, you know, these standards we put on stuff, and seeing just here, you know, the millions of pounds of food that we've rescued just at one smaller nonprofit here in Colorado. We meet with, you know, several other nonprofits across the nation that are doing similar food rescue type work and food banks. And I mean, there's so much happening in this space of like the kind of the salvage food space. It's pretty remarkable to see, even just at our nonprofit alone. Like, I mean, last year we hit just under 2 million. This year we're going to probably just pass 2 million.
2 million pounds.
Yeah, in a year. Yeah,
that's amazing.
It's wild. Yeah, especially when like one of these box trucks brings in anywhere from 200 pounds to maybe 10,000 pounds max. Like, I mean, we have trucks going in and out every day, pulling in stuff, you know, and we have drop offs.
Think about the sheer amount of food being moved in our county alone.
It's wild.
I mean, that's incredible.
It's wild. Yeah. Yeah. Or a trucker calls us off I-25. Hey, I got 40,000 pounds of onions. You guys want it? And we're like, yeah, come on in. That happens. Yes. So
that is a lot of onions.
Yeah. That's and we've had all sorts of crazy stuff, from truckload of paper towels, truckload of tomatoes, onions. We had a bunch of Body Armor drinks not that long ago. Like,
yeah,
just the craziest things.
Just like an ordering fiasco,
yeah, reefers out. Like, what? I mean, just thousands of reasons why. It's always something different. You know, and we got a pallet.
How did you get on their radar? Like, how did you become known to these?
Yeah, I spent a good amount of my time like networking with companies and getting our name out there. But people Google us, or people hear about us, or you know, a local bagel shop calls us when they, you know, start up a business here.
So someone's listening right now.
Hopefully, like,
I have food actually. Yeah. I run a bakery, or I do this, or I know someone who knows someone.
Maybe you own a fleet of trucks, right?
Yeah, fleet of trucks. Yeah, but that would be helpful.
you're moving food every day all up and down the major interstates, and now you know a place that you can drop it off. I mean, it costs truckers thousands of dollars to discard product that maybe just temped 1 degree off or something like that, you know, that got rejected, right? Or maybe, you know, we had one came down from, a Walmart DC in Cheyenne, that there was a couple of black specks on a couple of the peppers out of 6 pallets of peppers. I mean, it was probably, you know, 8,000 pounds or 10,000 pounds of peppers that just got rejected just because there was a couple black spots.
Yeah. You know? And they were like, feared of like contagion.
Well, we're like, we'll just pick out the bad peppers.
Yeah, we'll throw those ones away.
And throw them, we compost. So we actually work with a lot of local farmers to either compost or get our scraps to their animals. And so we're one step further from keeping it from the landfill as well. That's our last resort. If it's like, like you said, a contagion or an actual issue that we know is a recalled product, or it had a foodborne illness like E. coli or something attached to it, obviously we're gonna toss that. Some damaged cans, you know, that could potentially develop botulism, things like that, we have to be careful of. So we do have standards, you know, we're not just like, oh, we'll take it. You know, we definitely observe it, you know, things that are cut open that were open to outside contaminants or environmental issues, like, you know, pests or rodents or dust, or, you know, we're still pretty careful. We're still feeding the, you know, serving the community. So we want to do it.
I think that's incredible. I was just talking with someone. I do a fair amount of work with another humanitarian aid organization called Convoy of Hope. We were talking about some of the work that we're doing nationally and internationally. And one of their, you know, leaders or whatever dropped this quote that's just kind of stuck with me. Is that, you know, in the United States, our garbage disposals eat better than a third of the world.
So bad,
And that really stuck with, because it's just a picture, right? I mean, it's easy to flip that switch and suck some stuff down there and
see it gone.
And I was like, wow, like I actually, I'm part of that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm part of that problem. And
it's
so
easy,
just a fascinating thing that stuck with me. And then, you know, I discover you guys. And in preparation for me spending time with you, I wanted to come and get a firsthand look at like Vindicate Foods and what is this like. And so I came and I parked out in your parking lot. I waited in line right outside and I walked through your whole warehouse. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if that's what you call warehouse or
market.
Yeah. I mean, walking through the market, and I saw one incredible hospitality. Like, you've obviously done a great job training your people to be a hospitable environment. Mm. I stood in line. This is what the thing that was like really fascinating to me. There was every single type of person you can imagine in Fort Collins
That's
in that
awesome.
Line.
Yeah.
I mean, there were singles, there were families, there were senior citizens, there were young adults, there were children with their parents, there were white, black, and brown, every kind of socioeconomic background.
Yep.
I mean, I saw nice cars and I saw, you know, cars that were struggling. I mean, everything in between waiting in line. And then I walked through your market. I saw all kinds of different foods. And then there was at one point where I could kind of sneak my eyes around the corner into your warehouse. And I saw probably half a dozen people sorting food.
Yes.
And just getting ready to restock shelves. So tell me a little bit about like all of the working pieces that go into something. Because there's an incredible team.
Yeah.
And because of that team, you're serving a wide range of people at our center.
And you hit the nail on the head. It's so good to hear that, because this is not about need. It's about people coming together to keep food out of the landfill. So we are open to anyone. Anyone is welcome to come through our doors. And we want to serve everyone in the best way possible. And also rely on people to help us do this, right? So it's me. I have one other full-time staff and one other part-time staff. And then I have about 220 volunteers that kick butt every day of the week. 7 days a week, people are out there driving trucks, sorting food, composting stuff, putting stuff on our shelves, operating the market 3 days a week. And so, yeah, when we get six Gaylords of six pallets of squash and we need to sort through a few bad ones, we can get it done. And it's really empowering to see a group come around here, work hard, doing good, keeping food out of the landfill and serving their neighbor and doing that without question. You know, it's really powerful to see people caring about doing that.
I love it so much. And man, you've given me a lot of time already. I would love just like two or three more minutes because I have a specific question I want to talk about when it comes to funding.
Yeah.
But I do just want to reiterate what I am experiencing today, just being here with you, but also what I experienced, you know, a few weeks ago when I came through. What I really hear is you've got good stewardship going on in this nonprofit. I mean, you've got a few employees, but you've got a host of volunteers.
Yep.
So that keeps operating budgets down.
Yep.
You've got people driving all over the place, bringing food to you. So I'm hearing all kinds of ways that people can get plugged in with you.
Yep.
If you know where food is at, they can reach out to you. We'll put contact information in our show notes for sure. If they know how to drive a truck and they know how to load and unload or sort, or if they know people who just want to be part of this food rescue, either purchasing or volunteering, they can be part of Vindicate Foods too. But I also know you run a nonprofit, which doesn't mean there's no money involved.
Right.
It just means you're not taking a profit off of that. And so tell me a little bit about your financial needs, hopes and dreams that you have for your, meeting your annual budget.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on when people listen to this, it might be towards the end of the year, or they might be looking at a year of generosity ahead of them that they can get involved with. What do you have a need for, and how can people get involved with you financially?
It's a great, great question. Thanks for asking, Jeff. So we obviously, have bills to pay. So we just got into this new facility. Last year, we did a capital campaign to purchase this building, and now we're in it, which is great. We're doing a second phase of the capital campaign currently this year to build it out. So we've been doing a lot of code updates. We've been doing a lot of lighting, electrical, concrete, plumbing. We have plans to expand some of our walk-in cooler refrigeration capacity and freezers. We're looking at really just making this place super functional. We just got a cardboard baler installed. Just really trying to do the best we can with the building that we've been basically working so hard to get. And with that though, we still have our normal operating stuff. So we spend easily $35,000, sometimes $40,000 a month just on making this thing happen. So that's the truck, that's staffing, that's insurance, that's building maintenance, that's utilities. I mean, there's a lot of inputs to keeping food cold and keeping food at the right storage temperatures and environments, and obviously, paying all the fuel that goes into driving those trucks around. So a lot of ways that people can get involved just in a monthly donor. So I encourage people to go to our website, check out our donate page.
You guys have a great website, by the way.
Our,
like, it's really well done. There's good videos, there's good visuals, good storytelling.
Yep, we have our capital campaign site on there as well, talking about the visions for the future of this building. We have a piece of land out front that I'd love to buy too, so we can have a place to future expand or maybe expand our parking lot. Because as you probably experienced, parking even gets tight around here sometimes. So. So it's a lot of fun.
Big donors and tons of small sustaining monthly donors. I mean,
and that's something that's unique to our nonprofit is at the market, you can actually donate if you want to support what we're doing. You don't have to. So it is technically a no cost market is what we call it.
Yeah.
But what's really cool is a lot of those small donations start to add up. And that's a lot of how we're, it only is about 30-40% of our revenue. We still rely on a lot of private donors, corporate donors, grants, things like that. But still a significant amount of our revenue by design is helping us pay our bills.
Well, if you're listening to this and you've ever been around nonprofits, I hope you're hearing that. Because really, as a nonprofit leader myself, revenue streams from multiple different places is the ticket.
Yeah.
So you've got the ability for people to not only receive food and give what they can give.
Yep.
So that's a revenue stream. You've got grants, you've got foundations, you've got private corporate donors. I mean, that's a lot of different revenue stream. I'm sure you would love for those to increase, but that's a really good starting place to be.
Yep.
Making sure that there's multiple kind of spots where that's all coming in. I know that will help you guys a ton. And man, I'm just, like as one nonprofit leader to another, I'm super encouraged to hear that.
Thank you.
It means you guys have thought through some of that stuff, and it means that, you know, a gift today isn't going to be being wasted.
No.
It's going to help you guys propel into the future for many, many, many years.
Yep.
Well, Nathan, listen, I appreciate your time. We can wrap up here. I'd love to have another conversation with you. Maybe maybe as you guys expand, we'll come back and have another conversation. We'll make sure to put all the notes, everything that you had said, in the show notes for people to check out. I'm just so encouraged. I mean, we say a lot at Love FOCO that we want to tell stories of people who are loving our city one life at a time. Mm. And in just the last 35 minutes with you, it's not just lives. I mean, you are loving people, you know, are loving our city one life at a time. But you're also loving our environment. You're loving our businesses that maybe don't know what to do. Truck drivers that would have to spend money and fuel to dump their food somewhere else can now, you know, give it to you. So there's a multifaceted impact that you're making in our community. And man, I'm grateful to learn more.
Thank you.
And I'm grateful to share your story with so many others.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me, Jeff. This is great.
Thanks for listening to the Love FOCO Show. If today's conversation inspired you, share it with a friend who loves Fort Collins as much as you do. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode, and leave us a review. It helps more people discover us. To learn more about Love FOCO and find opportunities for loving our city one life at a time, visit lovefoco.com. For now, keep loving Fort Collins well.